Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Listening to the Strangeology Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Foran, and this is your place to explore the weird, strange, and unexplained. From cryptids and creatures, the paranormal, aliens and UFOs, forbidden knowledge, ancient mysteries, conspiracies, and more. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. Coming up on this edition is an update from author and friend of the show, Aaron Deese, on his latest book, Hunting Grounds, which is all about the Dogman. Well, summer is officially here, and this week has been super hot, and I'm very thankful to have AC in my upstairs office because I think I would need to move this whole operation into the basement of my house if I didn't. I mean, that might happen someday, but that would entail a lot of work and remodeling, but we're making do as is. But anyway, thank you for bearing with me while I took a little bit of time off last week from the usual production schedule. I've had so much going on at home between my partner's back injury flaring up and summer vacation for my older kid, at least. It's been super tough to get any new content done these past couple of weeks, much less editing the podcast. I have a few pre-recorded interviews that I just haven't had the time to do, but I do now, and here we are. Now, surgery is coming within the week for my partner, so that's going to help out a lot, and you know, hopefully everything goes well with that. This past weekend was also spent with family for my mom's celebration of life. As some of you may remember, she passed away back in February of this year, 2024. It was a hard day, but also a good day, and good to see family, extended family, cousins, aunts, and uncles that I haven't seen in a while. The forecast was originally supposed to be rain, but the weather cleared out in the morning for the ceremony, which was good. And, you know, maybe mom had something to do with that. I don't know. And it's curious because about a week prior, my mom visited me in my dreams, which hasn't happened at all since she died, or really ever, even when she was still here. And it was this brief thing, but basically she was telling me this message that, you know, at first she didn't even realize what had happened, but she's all right now and everything is okay on the other side. Now, I don't know how much stock should be put into dreams. I know there's a lot of people that think there is meaning to dreams and all of that. There's certainly a lot of study. I've had folks on the show talking about NDEs and shared death experiences and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, this one felt really real. And it definitely, it helped me to find peace and acceptance with it all. So I just thought I'd share that little bit there. This is a podcast about the strange and unexplained after all. And I always appreciate everyone's support with what I do with this. So thank you for listening and also bearing with me as I've been going through a bunch of stuff the past few weeks. But I'm going to keep this intro front-loaded as usual, but brief. Just wanted to throw a couple quick reminders out there before things get started. Don't forget to set your podcast app to auto-download so you never miss a new episode. And don't forget to follow Strangeology over on all of my social media accounts. I'm on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, etc. for more content, updates, short form videos, and all of that. Also, make sure to check out my website, strangeology.com. I do have a blog there with a bunch of articles that you can check out. And I also have a mailing list. I don't send out too many emails, if ever, but when I do, you can get discount codes to my shop and all that kind of stuff. And maybe updates on what I'm doing, news on events that I'll be at, etc. But the best way to support my show is to tell your friends and anyone who loves the strange and unexplained. Word of mouth helps so much. And if you love what I do with Strangeology and want to support the show, you can always become a member by heading over to patreon.com/Strangeology, and you can join for as little as $1 per month. Any support helps out a ton and helps keep the lights on here at Strangeology HQ. Higher tiers unlock more perks like early access and ad-free episodes, access to the members-only episode extension, Strangeology Beyond, which are sometimes a whole other research topic, or an extended guest interview. We have fun with it. There's also a merch discount for my shop that's permanent, exclusive merch, voting power on new topics, bonus content, and more. So if you want to join a growing community of like-minded people who are into the strange and unexplained, it's a great place to be. And I appreciate the support. And the more of it I get, the more content I can create on a regular basis and increasing frequency for everyone out there. And to all members of the show, past and present, you know who you are. Thank you so much for the continued or previous support. It helps me out so much. And finally, Monster Fest 2 is coming up next weekend. I've got some cool stuff lined up that's happening during the event that I can't talk about yet, but I'm definitely stoked to share it when I can. But anyway, it's happening June 29th. The main event is at the Doubletree in Canton, Ohio. There's a VIP ticket holder movie screening on the evening before, on the 28th, for a new Small Town Monsters film. And as well, VIP tickets will get you early access to the vendor hall on Saturday morning, where you'll find me and a lot of other great artists, creators, and podcasters. And there's going to be a number of guest speakers and workshops with people like Jim Harold, Ken Gerhard, Paul Bartholomew, Ryan Sprague, Lyle Blackburn, Mike Ann, Jeremiah Byron, and a whole bunch more. So it's going to be an awesome time. You can go to smalltownmonsters.com to grab your tickets. It's looking like this year is going to be bigger and better than last year. So I hope to see a bunch of you there. Come find me in the vendor hall, or maybe I'll be wandering around at some point. Either way, come say hi. All right, that's enough of that. Why don't we get into the episode for today's show? We have an update from Aaron Deese, who has recently published a follow-up book to last year's Texas Dogman Triangle, Dogman of the Lone Star State, this time with a focus on the Dogman of the LBL, along with a few other cool updates and stuff on the horizon. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. All right, folks, welcome back to the show. Joining me today is the one and only Aaron Deese from Hey Strangeness and now Small Town Monsters. Now, Aaron's been on the show a few times before, and you already really love it when he comes on, which is awesome. So stoked to have him back. He doesn't really need a reintroduction, but if anyone out there is new to the show, you're listening for the first time, Aaron, can you, what do you do?
Yeah, I do weird stuff. my name is Aaron Deese. I am an author and content producer with Small Town Monsters. You may know us from our documentary films, of which there are many. A few years ago, though, I started a podcast with my wife called Hey Strangeness, and that was kind of the springboard that launched me into this community, got me acquainted with Mr. Jeff of Strangeology over here. You know, it kind of connected me with a lot of really interesting and cool people who would turn out to be very important to my present career. So that's kind of where I got and how I got to what I'm doing right now. But I do story work and research for Small Town Monsters. I produce currently all three of our podcasts, The Lore You Know, House of Monsters, and STM Live. And then I've also been featured in a couple of our films, Dogman Triangle, Werewolves in the Lone Star State, the upcoming Dogman Territory, Werewolves in the Land Between the Lakes, which is coming out in really just a couple weeks once this airs. And I also made a small appearance in Chupacabra. And we just started airing UFOs Revisited, which I am the host of, which is a show I'm very excited about. So
that's awesome. I'm so happy for you, man. That's You're living the dream.
Thanks, man. Well, you've been a role model and an inspiration since day one. And that's not a joke.
Well, so. Well, thank you. Thank you. We're out here doing the thing, you know? So yeah, I want to get into this new book that you did. It's kind of a sequel to the Texas Dogman Triangle. It's called Hunting Grounds, the Dogman of the Lakes. Did I get that right?
Dogmen of the Lakes, but it's
Dogmen.
It's also a weird title, and I honestly wanted to change it after I had settled on it, but then we had already started publishing promos for it. So now you get it.
Yeah, it's too late. Too late. Yeah. So what led to the decision to look into the LBL versus other potential hotspots for dogmen?
Yeah, definitely. So I had finished the Texas Dogman Triangle, had a tremendous amount of fun doing that. You know, it was great. It was everything I wanted it to be. And then I kind of started looking at this dogman phenomenon through a different lens, like taking all of the stuff I had learned in Texas and going, okay, well, where else is this going on? And it turns out it's going on in a few places. So narrowing it down to a specific area really kind of came from brainstorming with Heather and Seth at STM. And they, you know, full credit to them, they were the ones that came up with the idea of, well, what if you look specifically at the Land Between the Lakes and dig into this massacre story, which was really an organic transition because people have been asking me about the LBL massacre since I started having conversations about Dogman. And it wasn't something I really had a definitive answer on. So I was excited to do it. I had already kind of made notes just from it being an area I wanted to look into at some point. And then it sort of became part of this whole, you know, combined exploration of the Land Between the Lakes that Small Town Monsters is doing, which is ongoing right now, because it ties into the movie Dogman Territory. And then, you know, it also is alongside Eli's Sasquatch on Earth series, Beasts of the Land Between the Lakes, which is airing right now, and Alex Petikoff's episode of Strange Places, Lost in the Land Between the Lakes. So it started just as looking into the massacre story and then also contrasting that to the dogman phenomena as a whole, kind of looking into that historically and going, okay, what else is going on here? And really, it wasn't even really planned. It just kind of happened. It became a piece of this wider narrative because the Land Between the Lakes is so strange and there's so much history there. We talked about this, I think, last time you were kind enough to have me on, and it's difficult to approach it with just a documentary, just a YouTube series, just a podcast, just a book. It's almost not possible if you want to get a comprehensive picture. So, you know, the book focuses very specifically on the dogman phenomenon in the LBL, but it's also, there's so much more. There's so much more out there.
Yeah. It's, the LBL has so much going on. So this massacre that happened, I'm sure some are aware, but can you give like a brief overview of that part of the story?
Yeah. So there is, in air quotes, a fun internet legend that's been circulating for the last few years. And I say fun because it's resulted in some very entertaining content. It's resulted in a lot of clicks and a lot of traffic for a lot of creators. And I don't, that's not like a snarky comment. It's a story and we cover stories. That's great. Let's talk about it. But it has very much transcended from just being a cryptozoology case to kind of having a life of its own in the internet age. And the story is that sometime in the early 1980s, a family of four were killed by one or possibly two of these dogman werewolf-like creatures in the Land Between the Lakes, which is a national recreation area that sits on the border of Tennessee and Kentucky. And it was very largely written off by a lot of the community, including myself, for a long time as just being an internet story. You know, oh, this is a creepypasta. We have tons of those. You could put it in the same category as the Russian sleep experiment or the man from Tara. You know, fun stories, probably not true. Maybe sure. Some basis in reality, but we're pretty sure this is fake. Yeah. Well, the earliest origin point of this story that we can trace in the media is the 2007 documentary Hunt the Dogman, High Strangeness in Kentucky, from Mr. Barton Nunnally, who I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with. Great guy. Great researcher. turns out, though, this story has been present in the Land Between the Lakes area. The town of Grand Rivers comes up quite a bit, which is adjacent to the park, since as early as 1982. We did not have social media in 1982. The internet barely existed at all, and it was used by academic and government organizations for stuff you and I probably wouldn't understand. So, at least not me. Can't speak for you. Definitely not me. So, once we've traced an origin point that predates the internet age, we can preclude the notion that this is an internet creepypasta. It may have become that in the intervening years, but that's not where we got its start. So then it becomes a question of what else is the history in this area? What else is going on that surrounds this alleged event that allows us to look into it more deeply? Within the last few years, a gentleman who calls himself Roger has come forward and claimed to be a survivor of the event. He did a few interviews with the Cryptid Studies Institute, which are not currently available publicly. And I actually had the opportunity to speak with him. Shannon and LeGros and I spoke with him during the filming of Dogman Triangle. Shannon, of course, is in this film and she's great. If you don't watch it for anything else, watch it to see Shannon because she's cool. And that added some additional details that weren't present in the general narrative. That has altered the discussion a little bit for people who were really interested in it. There are people go back and forth as to whether or not his account is valid, whether or not it's a true story. I have my own opinions that I won't share publicly. But it very quickly became evident that, again, this is not just a story of the internet age. I'm personally of the opinion that something happened. I don't think someone just made up this whole thing, because too many law enforcement officers that are in the area are willing to say that, yeah, I've heard of this. I heard this story at the time that it happened, or I know someone who actually responded to the initial scene. But as to how many of those details you see online are accurate, I don't know. Can't say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm familiar with that story for sure. And it is big if true, you know, like who knows exactly. But I mean, the LBL has such a storied history anyway. And besides Dogman, there's other things going on there. You've got UFO sightings, Bigfoot, paranormal, all that kind of stuff. And you know, I had Jesse and Joe from Hellbelt Holler on my podcast last year, and they were talking about how just like the history of that stuff is like soaked into the ground. Like mm-hmm. there was some bad stuff. People were displaced when it was turned into this reserve by the government. And I mean, I think there's still a few people that live there from what I understand, but mostly not. I mean, you've got all these abandoned cemeteries and all. It just seems like such a wild place. Now, did you during your research, and you mentioned this is a pretty comprehensive thing, Small Town Monsters, you guys are going pretty hard at this from a lot of different angles. Are there any other legends besides Dogman that have been kind of prominent on the radar we're looking into and getting more info about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Sasquatch activity out there is, excuse me, let's try that again. The Sasquatch activity out there is intense. Pretty much every person we spoke to about Dogman had an anecdote or an experience that was most likely the result of some kind of Sasquatch activity. So tons of Bigfoot reports, tons of researchers out there looking into that on a very regular basis. Excuse me. There are quite a few UFO sightings in the area throughout Tennessee and Kentucky anyway, but there are a lot of really high profile ones that take place very close to the land between the lakes. And we may have mentioned this last time you had me on, but the Thomas Mantell UFO crash took place very close to the land between the lakes. And based on the radar data and when that UFO was reported, it may have actually been moving in the direction of the park. We can't say that specifically, but it was moving in that general direction. So that, I don't know if that's something, but yeah, very interesting. The Kentucky Hopkinsville goblins incident, that was just about 30 miles from the LBL. If you zoom out a little bit and smudge over the lines that we as human beings have arbitrarily drawn, that took place in the same area, in the same spot. So it's very weird. And then, of course, there's been a lot of crime. There's a lot of shady human activity that's gone on there. Moonshining was a thing out there for a long time, may still be, according to some people. So even if you step away from the paranormal aspect and how weird it is, all these strange stories that come out of there, there's a very distinct and in some case violent history to this place that is documented, is known about. It's not even speculation. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely one of those, seems like one of those window areas of high strangeness, like your Bridgewater Triangles and Bermuda Triangles of the world. Mm-hmm. And is that part of Kentucky kind of still considered part of Appalachia, or is it too far west? I'm trying to envision a mind map here.
That's
I think
a
it might
good
be a little
question.
Too far west, but you know,
I don't know.
You always see on social media people are talking about like all the creepy stuff in Appalachia, and I mean, it's adjacent enough, I suppose.
Yeah, it's definitely like in the vicinity, and if we're speculating about window areas, vortex areas, portals, concentrations of energy, you know, we don't know exactly how those things work. So if Appalachia is a concentrated area of high strangeness, how far is that rippling out? We don't know, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point to think about for sure. Cuz you know, Appalachia kind of it's thought to stretch between like northern Georgia, little bit of Alabama, all the way up to like southwest Pennsylvania, but the mountain range that's a part of comes up through New England as well. There's a lot of weird stuff that happens in New England, and then that whole mountain chain used to be, before the continents broke apart from Pangaea, used to be part of like the Scottish Highlands and some other stuff in like Scandinavia, where there's like weird legends of stuff happening as well with creatures and monsters and all that. So who's to say?
We tend to look at these things as human beings in terms of what state is this in, what county is this in, you know, what concentration of high strangeness is this in. But yeah, I love that you mentioned Pangaea and going back to the roots of where these mountains literally come from. We don't know how all that's interconnected, so love that
idea. Yeah, and human borders are completely arbitrary, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of the planet itself. But so you guys are doing a brand new documentary follow-up to Texas Dogman Triangle based on this book. Have you gotten to go up to the LBL yourself and gotten to experience anything weird?
Yeah, one of the comments I saw a lot for the Texas Dogman Triangle was the documentary specifically was, oh, it didn't really have any field work. You guys weren't out there at night, you know, all that stuff. And the way that film was done and the way the book was written, it just wasn't an element of that. But this one is different. You'll see us in the woods at night. We get in some of the bunkers, the LBL bunkers that you hear about. So some very interesting stuff went on there. We do get out there with Jesse and Joe Doyle. I don't think that's a secret of Hellbent Holler. We go to the place where they had their sighting and they captured their very compelling thermal photograph a few years ago. So that's explored and talked about quite a bit. We do get out there with Mr. Martin Groves. If you've ever heard an interview with him, he's had some very compelling and really frightening encounters with these creatures in the park. So we were able to go out with him and see where some of this activity had occurred. And that was incredibly interesting and exciting for me because I tend to do most of my work with a computer. You know, I go to places and I talk to witnesses and take pictures, but most of the time the actual work is organizing and compiling and presenting information. So actually getting to get out there in the woods was a lot of fun. And the way Seth has edited this film, I think it's going to be a lot of fun for people to watch too.
Yeah, that's great. And yeah, for sure, a breath of fresh air when you actually get to walk away from the screens and burying your nose in books to actually go to places where things were actually said to have happened. Something I'd love to get more involved in as time moves forward myself. But
yeah, well, you know how it is. You hear a story, and until you've seen where that story took place, doesn't have to be anything paranormal. It can be, you know, an argument your friend got into at the McDonald's. So you see that McDonald's counter, you don't have the full image in your mind. And so like going to these places and realizing like, wow, something like this could have happened here based on what I see. It's kind of adds an element to it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now, how did you find, I assume you guys found some locals, you know, obviously you had Martin Groves out there. And he did an episode with Jeremiah over at Bigfoot Society last year, live from Monster Fest, which we'll talk about Monster Fest in a bit, but, you know, how did you find local witnesses? What were their opinions on sightings? Did people who live in that area believe there's something going on?
So the sentiment seems to be yes. Based on the people that we talked to, there is an idea at least that there's something strange going on in those woods, whether it's an animal, whether it's something supernatural, whether it's people hallucinating, you know, that's where opinions really start to vary. When you're talking about small communities like this, you know, it's not always easy to get a lead to the inside, you know, because you tell people you're working on a documentary, immediately people think of the mainstream stuff that's very sensationalized and pushes a very specific narrative, which is basically, you know, clickbait, to use that term. No disrespect to anybody who enjoys that content. I enjoy quite a bit of it myself from time to time, but not everybody wants to be involved in producing something like that. Not everybody wants to be on camera in the first place. We were very fortunate in that we had people like Mike Smith, Elijah and Gabby Henderson, Dewey Edwards, Martin, of course, Daryl Denton was along for the ride as well, who are locals to the area who have also been doing this kind of research for varying numbers of years. They've also had some of their own experiences. So, you know, we were able to kind of get in, work around that initial roadblock of not being locals to that area. Myself, especially, I really never spent time out there. So writing a book about it, you have to know what the place is like. And I kind of started from square one, just learning about the environment, the animals, the industry, what businesses are big out there, you know, what industries got their start out there versus what's there today. I really had to like start from square one, and having those people like Elijah, Mike, you know, Martin, really invaluable.
Yeah, well, that's awesome that you have those resources of people who, you know, are familiar. They've got their own stories and all that, for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, have you found, like, have there been any commonalities or patterns with different sightings of dogmen? Like, what do people usually experience when they see this stuff that they can't explain?
Yeah, yeah. The short answer is yes. There's definitely a pattern to this stuff. What that pattern doesn't seem to pervade every single sighting, but it's kind of the same with UFOs. You know, we hear a lot of UFO sightings where a person has radiation poisoning or radiation sickness afterwards, but not every single time. A lot of UFO reports mention orbs or spheres, not every single time. It's kind of the same way in the dogman world. the one thing that seems to be recurring that we note every single time, pretty much, unless we're talking about an auditory encounter, I heard something strange, but that's a whole nother, thing. We don't have to go down that avenue. a lot of speculation. It's an upright canine form, essentially, is what people are witnessing. Usually we're hearing about pointed ears, an elongated snout. Tails don't come up a whole lot. I know in pop culture, any depiction you see of a werewolf, there's usually a tail. Maybe not all the time, but very often. Don't hear a whole lot about tails. That's sometimes. So on the surface level, I saw a dog walking on two legs. What's striking about these encounters is that very, very often, I would say 75, 80% of the time, witnesses report feeling uncomfortable, afraid, having nightmares afterward, being afraid to go in the woods. And we're usually talking about hunters, campers, people who are used to being outside, law enforcement officers, military veterans. You know, if there's something in the woods, the people in the woods are the ones most likely to encounter it. And the people most likely to be in the woods are the ones who are comfortable being there. And that's usually who these reports come from. So to me, that's striking for two reasons, because one, if I just see a strange dog, I'm not going to have nightmares for 30 years. I'm not going to have post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm just not. Maybe if that dog chases me or bites me, that's a whole nother dimension. But if I just see a dog walking through the woods, it's not going to have that effect on me. And I think that's probably the same for most people. You saw a dog. What was the other thing I was going to say? I lost it. That's the most important part, though, is the impact. It's the impact that these sightings have on the witnesses, because we can sit here all day and go, well, what did they actually see? What was going on there? Was it paranormal? Was it an animal? That person's experience and the consequences they face after having that experience are not subject to our, you know, critiques. It doesn't really matter what we think, because that's real. That's real to them. And that's what comes up again and again as these in these dogman sightings is the distinct impression that, no, I saw a canine form on two legs. I did not see a bear. I did not see an ape. I did not see Bigfoot. I saw what I can only describe as a werewolf. And then these lasting impressions of like dread, fear, sometimes physical sickness. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's, I would say good to have, you know, at least a little bit of a pattern recognition there for all these commonalities that people who don't know each other are, they're all reporting the same thing, which to me sounds like there's something actually there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's super interesting. Now, do you have any encounter stories, save for the massacre or Martin Groves, any like crazy stories that you heard about when writing the book that really stick out in your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a great conversation with a gentleman named Mike Smith, who is also in the documentary and featured in the book. And he has lived in this area pretty much his entire life. He's camped in the Land Between the Lakes for pretty much his entire life, you know, knows the terrain, knows the wildlife very well. And he hasn't had a visual sighting, but over the years, he's developed an interest in this stuff. And he's had people contact him. You know, he's kind of become a default researcher because you're there and you're hearing these stories. So he's had a few people contact him with his own or with their own visual sightings. And then he's gone out and done research in areas where he's actually experienced very strange auditory activity, picked up EMF waves on a reader near a graveyard. And when this happened near this graveyard, he was there with his son. It's in the movie in the book, so I don't want to go into too many details because I'll get them wrong and then someone will go watch it and be like, you got this wrong. But he actually captured a footprint and was able to cast it. And it does not look like a Sasquatch print. It is way too big to be a human print. And he actually ran it by, I believe Dr. Jeff Meldrum, if I'm not mistaken, took a look at it and said, this is not a Sasquatch print. I could be misremembering because I haven't talked about this in an interview yet, so I didn't practice this, but a very noted Sasquatch researcher, I believe it was Dr. Meldrum, looked at it and was like, yeah, no, that's not Sasquatch, dude. I don't know what you got, but it's something. So, you know, we don't often see, right? we don't often get physical evidence in dogman cases. And when we do, it's usually not very good. It's usually easily debunkable. But this is a really compelling potential dogman print that was captured by someone who, you know, I'll die on this hill, is a very reputable researcher and does look at this stuff objectively. So.
Yeah.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, actual potential physical evidence is pretty big. You know, I mean, there's so much in the world of Bigfoot, Sasquatch with track castings and, you know, samples of potential hair or what have you. But yeah, no, that'll be cool to see if anything comes of that or if there's more stuff to come with some physical evidence. Now, I was wondering, has there been anybody else out there who has, you know, potentially been attacked by these things? Because they it seems like they're a hell of a lot more aggressive and potentially more dangerous than something like a Bigfoot. You know, people, the stories I've read, you know, people are like, this thing jumped out in front of my car. It snarled at me and like jumped across the road in one leap. Mm-hmm. probably could have like torn the door off the car if they wanted to, like.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's yes. it's another short answer. Yes. Scenario. I, of course, did not meet anybody who claimed to have been physically attacked by one of these things. but there are quite a few stories. Again, talking to Martin, law enforcement officer, 30-year career, great reputation. People know who he is. You know, he mentioned that there may be as many as 30 deaths that have taken place within the Land Between the Lakes as a result of these creatures. Can you find those records publicly if you go looking? No. There's also quite a bit to the idea that there's a reticence on the part of the powers that be, the law enforcement in the area, to talk about this stuff publicly. That's a rabbit hole I won't go too far down, but what I will say is I consider Martin to be very credible. And if he tells me something, he believes that what he's telling me. I believe that. No equivocation. I believe Martin believes what he's telling me. So there's quite a bit of conjecture about it. And then again, a lot of the local researchers like Mr. Smith and Mr. Henderson have received reports of these things physically attacking people, second or third hand from park rangers, visitors to the park, locals in the area. Jesse and Joe Doyle over at Hellbent Holler have received over 100 potential dogman reports in the North Carolina, South Carolina area, including one where it was alleged to have chased a vehicle at very high speed. So, you know, you mentioned that in kind of in jest, but we actually do have reports where these things are said to have chased or attacked vehicles. So I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we any closer to figuring out what Dogman actually is? I mean, I know there's a bunch of theories. Someone recently was like, oh, they're called, what is it? Cynocephaly, which is like, goes back to like ancient Greece, where there were these dog-headed men that lived on an island somewhere. I want to say it must have been in the Mediterranean or something like that, but like,
yeah,
it sounds like something like this has been around for a long time.
Yeah. Like, I'm of two minds there. I believe firmly that this thing has been with us pretty much since the dawn of civilization, probably before. And I believe that because we see depictions of upright canines in Mesopotamian art. I'm talking, you know, back to Gilgamesh times now. Like since the beginning, some of the earliest depicted artwork in the human record is of upright canines. So there's that. The cynocephali is a really interesting idea. This idea of a biological, not just biological, but intelligent, civilized species of half human, half canines. My opinion is that those legends are probably a result of mistranslation. We can point to specifically Saint Christopher in Catholic mythology, where he's depicted as being a dog-headed holy man, warrior, saint. It's widely believed that those depictions are the result of a misspelling of his name or the region he was from. I can't remember specifically, but it was very close to the word dog, and it became that. So I don't have my notes in front of me to explain that in detail. But and then also when we're talking about, you know, stories of different civilizations, Christopher Columbus is said to have encountered the cynocephali in some stories. But I think what we might be looking at there is kind of just the way in which people in other time periods viewed other civilizations, how they would look at other cultures and other practices and compare them to their own. And I think it's my opinion, as someone who's not a proper scholar or historian, I think some of those legends at least are the result of that. But I do believe that whatever is causing these modern day sightings of these upright canines, I do believe whatever that is has been with us for a very long time, whether it's a biological species, a spiritual or supernatural element of some type, or just something we carry around with us, you know, whatever that means. So yes and no.
Yeah. I mean, it's so nebulous. I mean, you have people who are like, well, I mean, this goes with any prominent cryptid like Bigfoot or Dogman. Like, where's the evidence in the fossil records of creatures like this? I mean, Bigfoot probably has like more footing to stand on with like Gigantopithecus, mm-hmm. which was a 10-foot tall ape that was able to stand on bipedally. Mm-hmm. But where's the evidence of something like a Dogman? Has that come up in your research at all, or has anyone been able to offer any kind of idea of why that might be? Like, you know, we're not finding Dogman bodies or
or
anything like that.
There are some rumors and some stories. I'm thinking of one that Nick Redfern wrote about specifically, and I can't remember the book he writes about it in, but it can actually, I believe it was Shapeshifters. Great book. Where he talks about a legend out of somewhere in England where someone is alleged to have the skeleton of a Dogman creature. And it's in this town where there's a werewolf legend that goes back a few hundred years. And, you know, you're not going to find pictures of it online. I looked. If anyone does find it, let me know. But so there is.
You're going to have to go to England.
Yeah, get over there. Call Nick. Ask him. I don't know. Actually, I've got his email. Let me. But no, shoot him an email right now. So there are some stories about that. With the fossil record, that's fun. I'm not an archaeologist, but I do know that we discover new species all the time. I do know that for a very long time, we thought Brontosaurus and Apatosaurus were two different things. Turns out they're the same species. We didn't think dinosaurs had feathers for a very, very long time. So we're always learning new things and finding new things. When we find fossils of animals, we don't usually find whole skeletons. You know, a lot of people probably know this already, but when you see dinosaur skeletons in museums, generally they didn't find all those bones in one place. They were from different places, and they were able to determine these are from the same species, so we're going to put them together. Sometimes they have to fill in the blanks with artificial pieces. So if we found Dogman fossils, how would that necessarily look anything different from, say, you know, just a canine skull or a canine appendage or a fossilized canine, or a fossilized canine footprint? The same thing applies to modern day sightings. Say there are, you know, a few dogmen, quote unquote, in a given area. One of them dies. It's already away from human eyes. It's already in an isolated area. Animals in general, we know, will go away to isolated places when they're sick or they know that their time is coming. So add that to the fact that decomposition happens very, very rapidly in the wild. Scavengers, bacteria, bugs, the elements. If we found a dogman skeleton, unless we found it within a few hours of it dying, who's to say it would look anything differently from a wolf, a coyote, something that was hit by a car? I don't know that we would know that. The same goes for DNA. If Dogman is an amalgamation of known canine species, a mutant or a one-off crossbred situation, which I think there's some room to make that argument, why would the DNA look anything differently than a mix of wolf, dog, coyote, which is what a lot of wild canine DNA looks like? Same with the Texas Chupacabra. We finally figured out that that is something that's a little bit strange. We're not exactly sure how this happened, but we know that it has wolf, coyote, domestic dog DNA. So, and all of those species have displayed the ability to walk on two legs for limited periods. So then the question is, like, can they crossbreed in such a way that one of their offspring adapts to that as a primary method of locomotion? That's what I don't know. But as far as remains, footprints, you know, DNA, I tend to think it would probably all look like just regular canine stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a all really good and valid points for sure. And then, you know, I was thinking it's also with fossilization, a very certain set of conditions need to happen for fossils to form. And, you know, how many dinosaur fossils do we have? It's really not all that many. Or any other ancient extinct species, or even species that are still around. And scavenging decomposition happens very rapidly. So there are people that do come across carcasses of larger animals in the woods sometimes, but it's not all that often, I would think.
Yeah, it's kind of the same argument people make with Sasquatch. Like, why haven't we found a dead Sasquatch? Well, how often have you found a dead bear? You know, how often do hunters and woodsmen find dead bears? Not very often. So scale the numbers down of available specimens by however many thousand. You know, we don't have hard data yet. I don't think it's very likely we would find one. I think it would be a very random chance, like catching a shooting star, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that it's a big possibility with Bigfoot, since they are, if they do exist, they are a hominid species and they're intelligent. They might bury their dead. Mm-hmm. And if dogmen are intelligent, I mean, dogs bury their bones.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
They could do a similar thing. They could do a similar thing.
Exactly.
And we'd never know, be none the wiser. So, yeah. Now, as far as the different dogman hotspots around, I mean, what do you think the reason is they're in the LBL? Is it just because of the remoteness of the area? Are there any ideas surrounding why there's certain hotspots, aside from, you know, vortex areas and stuff like that?
Yeah, I was going to say, then we get into the nature of what they are. Because if we're talking about supernatural, spiritual, something from another dimension, whatever, which is where a lot of the speculation is going nowadays, that's being talked about quite a bit. Is it because of the history? Is it because of the elements in the ground? You know, there's a lot of folklore and mythology surrounding rivers and lakes. A lot of these sightings take place next to bodies of water. Land Between the Lakes is the largest inland peninsula in the United States. You can't get more than a few miles away from water in any direction. So does that have something to do with it? A lot of these areas where we're seeing concentrations, and I can mention Ohio as another example, have a history of iron mining and limestone mining and steel refineries and things like that. Iron has folklore and mythology going back to, again, the ancient world. You know, our ancestors believed that iron interacted with the spiritual realm in different ways based on their belief systems. But there's that. Jesse Doyle has mentioned that when they took all this iron out of the Land Between the Lakes, maybe they removed some kind of protection that was keeping these dark beings at bay. So there's an idea. And that's explored more in the documentary and the book, but fun little teaser to get you excited. So there's that idea. You know, if these are spiritual beings, maybe it's the physical elements in the environment and the way that we interact with them that causes them to show up. On the other side of the coin, if they are animals, if they are true cryptids, we can point to the fact that they generally occur, like I mentioned, in wooded areas, in isolated locations. We do have some roadside sightings that take place close or adjacent to cities, but they're usually near wooded areas, pretty much always near wooded areas. I have yet to encounter a dogman story that I've done any significant research on. You hear anecdotes and stuff online, but that took place in an urban area. Maybe there are some, maybe your listeners can point me to some, but it seems by and large, these are taking place near wooded or undeveloped areas, if not in those areas already. National parks, ranches, campgrounds, mountainous places. So if it's an animal, it needs concealment. It needs prey, because if it's a canine, it has carnivorous tendencies, and it needs water. We find all three of those things present in pretty much all of these encounters.
Yeah, yeah, that all very much makes sense. You know, wooded, potentially mountainous. You got to have your lakes, your rivers, and all that, and a source of food. Yeah, I was thinking the other day, I was like, have there ever been any dogman sightings out in like the Southwest, like Arizona, New Mexico, Utah? I mean, there's obviously like legends of like skinwalkers mm-hmm. and stuff like that, but dogmen specifically, like, I don't know if that environment would really gel with them, unless you've come into any different information. But yeah,
just
random thought of the day I had.
No, you're right. and I can't speak to that area, you know, I haven't written a book on Arizona, New Mexico, but a lot of the conjecture you hear that comes out of that area concerns, well, this is probably a skinwalker. It's adjacent to these native lands. And that is actually explored very thoroughly in The Skinwalkers, American Werewolves 2 from Small Town Monsters, which I am not in and had nothing to do with. But some of the themes in that film cross over with some of the themes in Hunting Grounds. And that was pure coincidence. So, you know, I am not a person of native descent. I probably got some in there somewhere. I'm never going to say, well, skinwalker and dogman are the same thing. I don't know. I don't know. And I'm not here to try to make that point. I don't have the knowledge or the cultural background to even begin. But if we're talking about an upright canine archetype, people do often mention them in the same sentence. So, but yeah, what I don't hear a lot of is people going dogman as a separate thing from the skinwalker presence in those areas. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a good point. Now, the one thing I'm wondering about your opinion on is, and I can't remember if we talked about this last time, but government cover-ups. Do you think it's possible that the government might know of the existence of these things and other cryptids? There's this whole conspiracy theory that national parks were made because there's cryptids and creatures in there that the government doesn't want the public to know about or get hurt by or something like that. Yeah. But what's your opinion on that? And, you know, potential military experiment gone wrong. Like, yeah, it's a weird rabbit hole.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's such a fun idea, man. And it's one of those places where, you know, the legend intersects with fiction because we see that trope all throughout fiction. I mean, you know, if you look at the Underworld movies, that's not quite what you were describing, but this whole idea of an underground werewolf society existing alongside us, you know, I think it's a great idea, but I haven't run into any evidence or enough compelling testimony to make me think that that's the case. I think what's more likely is that they don't care. I don't think it happens often enough that the federal government is like, we got to get a handle on this. We got to deal with this. I think there is definitely a reticence on the part of, like I said earlier, local law enforcement or even federal law enforcement that are active in that area to talk about this stuff. But if you're a law enforcement officer with no general interest in the paranormal, why would you agree to an interview on something like this? Why would you risk your reputation if you hadn't had a real experience, you know, like Martin Groves that cemented in reality for you? Why bother? So I would guess that these reports probably still are coming in from time to time. The rumors are probably still floating around in certain circles, but these people don't have enough of an investment to come and talk to people like you and me, you know, and I wouldn't either. I would not either. When I worked in apartment management, I didn't want to talk to anybody about anything I did not have to talk to them about because I was trying to get through the day. And I expect their jobs are a lot more stressful than mine was. So that's kind of where I go.
Sure.
There. Yeah. I think it's kind of the same with like UFOs. The government probably knows more than what they're telling us. I'm sure there are elements of any government organization that are like, yeah, I don't want to deal with this dogman thing. So I'm just going to not do a press conference about this. But I don't.
Right.
I'm not of the opinion that it's a mass cover up. I'm not of the opinion that it's necessarily a conspiracy. I don't buy into the government breeding program angle. I just don't. That's my opinion. People are welcome to disagree with me. Point me towards resources that might change my mind. But aside from YouTube comments, I haven't seen enough to point me in that direction. I think if they're out there, well, I do believe that they're out there at some capacity, but I don't think it's something the government has control over or, you know, is hiding from us necessarily. I just don't think they care that much.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, if it's there's... Not a ton of them. They're not coming into urban areas and being a menace to society.
Yeah.
Just like, let them be.
Let a guy say, I saw a werewolf. No one's going to believe him anyway. If I'm a government official, that's my mindset. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to jump back to UFOs for a second. Do you think, you know, sometimes there's UFO sightings in conjunction with Bigfoot sightings. Did you run across anything? I know you mentioned that pretty major UFO event that happened earlier in the episode here, but were there any stories you came across where people saw a dog man, but then they also saw like a UFO either in that moment or shortly after, you know?
There is an encounter in the book that is very much more on the bizarre kind of spectral realm. It's difficult to make a case for that one as being a biological animal. That's another one that actually comes from Martin Groves. He's had continuing experiences there. And I don't want to go too into details. It'll spoil a lot of really interesting stuff from the book and the movie. But during an encounter he had very recently, UFO sightings in Kentucky and Tennessee spiked dramatically by a percent of like 80% or something like that. I don't have my numbers in front of me, but in the few days before and few days after this very dramatic sighting, there were a lot more UFO sightings, according to Newfork, N-U-F-O-R-C, their database. So maybe. And you hear so much conjecture about ghost lights and things hovering over the trees. Jesse and Joe Doyle have experienced some of that on their research trips. So it's kind of one of those things where it's hard to say that, yeah, there's a direct connection. I didn't see Bigfoot get into a UFO, for example, but the proximity, the adjacency is definitely there. People are having these independent experiences. Do they overlap? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I suppose that kind of strengthens the argument a little bit about these things might be more spiritual or interdimensional or something like that. Or maybe it's a combination of all of the above. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's such a weird, such a weird thing.
It really is. It's I'm reaching a point, and maybe I shouldn't say this out loud because I can't fully explain it yet, but I'm reaching a point where I think the dogman question transcends, is it an animal or is it a spirit of some kind? I don't think it's that simple. Paranormal phenomena and folklore crosses over with the real world all the time. They're pretty much any paranormal monster you can think of is derived from some kind of real world beast. Goatman, donkey lady, Sasquatch is an ape man, the frogman. Like, we see this amalgamation of real world animals and mythological creatures all the time. I just think the question's bigger than that, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, it's kind of like, with the Eighth Tower, John Keel.
Yes.
Like, what?
Yes. It's very Keelian. I think the direction I'm going with this stuff, I don't know if the super spectrum is pulling the strings and screwing with me. I definitely feel like somebody is some days, but that's just having a toddler. But yeah. Yeah.
I feel you there for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, dogmen are out there, it seems like. So what's next for your research? Are you going to continue looking into other dogmen hotspots, or do you think you're going to start to branch off into other cryptid stories? What's on the agenda here?
Yeah. I'd kind of like to do both. I'm definitely planning to take a break from writing books for a little bit, because I'm 2 books in 3 years now, and that was fun. It was great. I loved it. It's what I've always wanted to do since I was a kid. I wanted to be an author, but I do want to take a step back and kind of let things stew for a little bit. I'm already getting some contacts from people who have had encounters both in Kentucky and Texas since, you know, the work I've already done on that was put out. So I'd like to give it more time. And then I've also heard some rumors about potential sightings in Australia, potential sightings in Europe. And so I'm working on making some connections, hopefully in those areas, to look more deeply into that. I've already been in touch with one viewer of STM Live, which is our weekly Small Town Monsters live stream, who pointed me towards an alleged encounter out of Scotland in the early 2000s. So, you know, and Scotland has the legend of the Wolver, which is another European werewolf myth. So it's, I want to chase those threads as far as I can, and I don't want to be rushed. You know what I mean? So in the interim, I'm spending a lot of time on UFOs these days. We've already announced On the Trail of UFOs season 2 over at Small Town Monsters, and I'm involved in the background of that production. So that's been a lot of fun. UFOs cool. Revisited, of course, is airing right now. And I spent a lot of people behind the scenes spent a lot of time on that, but I was doing research for many hours to have the episode outlines ready for our cast for that. So I'm very much in the UFO headspace right now. Then, like, you know, somebody at STM is always doing Bigfoot stuff and they're better at it than I am. So I'm going to leave Bigfoot alone in case anyone was wondering, at least for now.
yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, man, that's super exciting. I mean, has the book gotten some really good feedback as of yet? I mean, it's still pretty new.
Yeah. It's doing well. The feedback from friends, colleagues, you know, members of the Small Town Monsters community has all been very positive. People have been incredibly kind, and I'm grateful for all of that. Their Amazon reviews are pretty good. I don't like reviews in general. I usually don't bother to read them because people just, you know, like to complain. But the only negative review I've gotten on Amazon so far was, I lived in this area and I had never heard of this, but I did hear about Sasquatch and UFOs. And I was like, to me, that's not a bad thing. To me, that's not a negative review. You learned something. You just told anyone who's curious that this book has information you didn't know about before. So to me, that's a win. So yeah, in general, the feedback's been very kind and positive, and I'm really grateful for that.
There you go. There you go. Any press is good press.
Yeah. Tell your friend you didn't like it. That's fine. They heard of it.
Yeah, exactly. Gets it out there.
Yeah.
To the world.
And also, what books have you written lately? But that's a separate thing.
Yes, of course. Well, this has been an awesome update, Aaron. Thank you again for taking some time to come and chat about, you know, your work into the wide world of Dogman and, getting to the bottom of some stuff in the LBL in Texas. Before you go, can you tell my listeners the best place to, you know, find all of your stuff online?
Yeah, I am very active on the Small Town Monsters social media channels because I run them. That's part of my job. So you can always find me over there. You can tune into our weekly live stream if you actually want to hang out and ask questions. That's Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. on YouTube and Facebook. You can also email me, Aaron@smalltownmonsters.com. And then my Instagram account is @hey_strangeness. I'm one of the many people following Jeff if you need to isolate it. But that's my personal account where I just kind of hang out, and then, you know, work is work. That's over here. But yeah, I'm fairly accessible.
Right on. And you mentioned the book is on Amazon, and yeah, definitely pick up a copy.
Yes. If you get it
all.
Sorry.
Yeah.
If you get it from smalltownmonsters.com/shop, it is cheaper because you don't have to pay Amazon their go-between fees. So
there you go. There you go. Always want to save some cash, mm-hmm. especially in these times. All right, man. Well, thank you again. And we'll chat soon.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and before we go, Monster Fest, end of the month. If you're going, you'll see us there.
I was going to say, I'll see you table. In a few days.
Aaron's
really.
Going to be there. Yeah. It's in a few weeks from this recording. So definitely check it out. I'll have information links in the show notes for all that. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Take care, dude.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. Thanks again, Aaron, for coming on the show one more time. I think he's been my most frequent guest for the show. I always love having Aaron on. He's such a dude, such a scholar. But yeah, definitely, if you're coming to Monster Fest, definitely come say hi. We'll be around, and I'll have all of Aaron's links in the show notes for all of his books, Small Town Monster stuff, Hey Strangeness podcast. It'll all be there. So definitely check that out. As always, I want to give a huge thank you out there To everyone who checks out the Strangeology podcast, those of you who download it, share it with friends and family, it helps me out so much when you do that. The Strangeology podcast wouldn't be possible without the support of listeners like you. To any advertisers or companies out there looking to collaborate with the Strangeology podcast, or if you're someone who would like to be considered for an interview on the show, if you're an author, researcher, experiencer, please send all inquiries to info@strangeology.com. And beyond becoming a member through my Patreon, you can also support Strangeology through my Etsy shop, which is at strangeology.etsy.com, where I have a whole assortment of cryptid, alien, and Fortean gear available on items like t-shirts, tank tops, long sleeves, sweatshirts, hoodies. Hot weather is here, so if you're going to get something, you probably want to go with a tank top. I've got all sorts of cryptid encounter designs. I've got my home state cryptid collection, which has every state in the U.S., the most popular cryptids. I must have at least 60 plus designs for that. And periodically I add new ones. So definitely you're going to want to check back on my shop frequently, because I'm always trying to add new designs as often as I can. I've also got tons of stickers, magnets, prints, my home state cryptid map print, which is a popular item, mugs, enamel pins, there's blankets, hats, and more. And again, make sure to check back often. I recently updated the shop with several new designs and hoping to add more over the summer as well. So again, that is strangeology.etsy.com. Check it out. And one more time, if you haven't yet, make sure to give me a follow over on all my social media accounts. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok. I'm most active posting short form content videos on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. So if you're looking for more from me, definitely check that out. And I have longer form videos on YouTube, trying, hoping, as schedule permits, to expand and add more long form video content. I've had a bunch of people asking if I can start doing a video podcast. So I'm trying to explore that idea as time permits. But yeah, stay tuned on all that. And also don't forget to check Instagram. Every once in a while, I do a giveaway for Strangeology merch. And I haven't done one in a little while. And the show is starting to get pretty close to 500,000 downloads. So I think that would be a great milestone marker for a giveaway. So that's probably going to be happening pretty soon. So stay tuned. All right. I think that's all for me for now. I'm going to take a quick break here. Aaron was able to hang out for a little while longer to chat about some non-Dogman related topics like UFOs and a few other things. It got really interesting, so you won't want to miss it. So patrons, stick with me, and for everyone else, you'll hear from me after Monster Fest 2. So take care of yourselves and each other, and keep it strange. Welcome back to Strangeology Beyond, your exclusive portion of the show. Aaron, you are a gentleman and a scholar. Thank you for
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.